So we'll study the Meshech Chochma for Parshas Vayeshev. The first three pieces in Parshas Vayeshev address the relationship between the brothers of Yosef and Yosef. The Torah testifies more than once that there was a hatred between the brothers of Yosef and Yosef.
That's officially.
And by the way, we'll need a chumash. All right, hopefully we'll find the chumashim as we go along. I'd like to call your attention to the third piece in Parshas Vayeshev, and maybe we'll go back later on if we have time to the first two pieces. Thank you so much. And we're looking at a piece that is in Perek Lamed Zayin, that's the 37th chapter of Genesis, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, and it says Vayatzilehu Miyadam. This is a reference to Reuven, who saves Yosef from the clutches, from the grasp of his brothers. And the Meshech Chochma is bothered because there's a statement in Chazal to the effect that Reuven advocated throwing Yosef into a pit, and that bar was not just some innocuous, you know, pit, but rather it was full of nechashim vakrovim. It was full of dangerous animals, let's call them nechashim, are serpents, and akrovim are, let's say, scorpions, whatever they are. And the Zohar itself, aware of this interpretation of the bar and its contents, is bothered by the question, how could the Torah testify about Reuven, Vayatzilehu Miyadam? I'm not so great on pages. I'll tell you why, because I need to use my own copy. But tell me something. Is it fair for me to assume that if I say Lamed Zayin and Chaf Aleph, I'm able to find that?
Yeah.
Excellent. So Rabosa, you'll have to be one up on me. You'll have to be ahead of me here, and I'm just going to tell you a chapter and a verse, and then I'm going to tell you one or two words in that verse, and you're going to be able to find it. Find the text in your copy.
Okay,
that's what I'm hoping you'll be able to do. And I can't tell you the page number because I needed to use my copy because it allows me to write my notes on the song. Okay then?
In this issue, it's page Kuf Ayin. But if you have
great Kuf Ayin
chapter and verse,
should be good enough. You'll be intelligent enough to find the page. But if you want to look on Kuf Ayin, you'll find it. Okay, in my text it's on Resh Pei Aleph because I have a different edition. Now the pasuk testifies Vayatzilehu. Is that called Hatzolah? Would you say that you save someone when you throw him into a den of scorpions and dangerous serpents? And we're going to soon see that's in the next piece, which is in pasuk Chavdal. We're not up to that yet. That it took a miracle of God to intervene, a divine intervention, to save Yosef in the bottom of this pit. Which means that al pi derech hateva, Yosef should have died in the bottom of the pit. So it's hardly feasible or respectable to say that Reuven saved, that he saved Yosef by throwing him into this dangerous pit, when al pi derech hateva, Chazal say, he would have died in the pit. It was only a divine miracle, that supernatural event that saved Yosef.
Did Reuven know what was in the bottom there?
And Reuven was aware of this. That's the Zohar's question. The Zohar says, how could you call this Hatzolah? Again, the Zohar is going to offer one approach. Rabbi Simchan is, as I always tell you, is very original. He's not, you know, he's not bashful. He's going to offer his own answer to this question. But if you're interested, I can tell you the Zohar's answer. The main thing is that we understand the question.
The question is, what was Reuven's intention?
Again, the premise here.
Who is he?
I'll ask you, Doc, the following question. If let's say you knew that by placing a person in a certain location, he will definitely die unless there's some supernatural miracle.
No, a doctor giving a medication which can kill a patient.
No, I'm talking about a case. Oh, okay, if it's going to kill the patient. I was talking about a case where you tie someone up on a railroad track, okay? Or, for example, you tie him up in the heat of the sun in a desert when it's 120 degrees Fahrenheit. He's going to die. And the premise is, A, that was the situation of Yosef in the bottom of the pit, and B, that Reuven was aware of that. And therefore the Zohar is bewildered. How could the Pasuk testify about Reuven, Vayatzilehu, that he saved them? He didn't save them. He basically advocated murder in the case of Yosef. Again, in the Kasha. Again, this is all the Havamin. And now we're gonna try to resolve this question. You understand? Because the Torah, at the end of the day, does testify that Reuven saved his brother Yosef.
So surely, therefore, you must say that if it says by Yitzelayu that he had good intentions to save him and he didn't know. Well, he didn't know he would be killed.
Okay, but that's, you know, again, Doc, I always say the following, if you could take it from me, and in a good spirit, because I may say it in a harsh way, but I hope you won't take it. But I'm going to say the following. The purpose of our class is to study Rabbi Simcha. Again, if we had hours and hours, and if I didn't meet with you for 45 minutes once a week, I'd love to hear your interpretation. But that's not the, you know, I only meet with you, so you have to have, you know, you have to have Rachmanis. My purpose is to prove to you with every single word and every paragraph from Meir Simcha how original and how creative he was. Shivim panim la Torah. If you don't know what that means, then don't come to my class, because my class is always based on Shivim panim la Torah, which means there are 70 answers to every single question. Yesterday I gave a class on why it is that we have 8 days of Hanukkah, which really only have 7 days of Hanukkah. So I gave an answer which was based on the Imre Noam. And I told the people, please understand, there are 1,001 answers to this question. But come into my class with an open mind, because I'm going to give you the number 1,001. So again, if we had more time, again, I would love to hear what you want to say, but we just don't have the time for that. So I know you're busy scheduled, Doc. If you want to cut out one morning of Chavrusa in Yoredeha, then Eichidami, we'd sit down and I'd like you to give me your answers to these questions. But since we only have this period of time, let's see what Rav Meir Simcha could say. Very, very original. And it's all based on a sugya in the Gemara, which he knows and maybe we don't know, and that is that there are two types of misa. There are two types of death. There's one misa which is called misa bidei Adam, and there's another misa which is called misa bidei Shamayim. And we'll try to understand. When a person is guilty of a crime, and if it's a capital crime, he is meant to die. That's what it means to violate a capital crime. However, there's a fundamental distinction between the following two cases of a capital crime. Case number one is where a person is to be put to death. And that means if he is judged and found guilty in a Jewish court of law, as a result of that condemnation, we will put him to death. That's called a chiyuv misa bidei shamayim. There's another type of crime where he's not guilty to the same extent, and therefore he cannot be put to death by a Jewish court, but it's in the hands of the Almighty to bring about his death. That's a punishment which is called a chiyuv misa bidei shamayim. Again, the first is called a chiyuv misa bidei Adam. Adam means the bezdin, that we put him to death. And the other is bidei shamayim, the heavens, so to speak, will put him to death. Now, obviously there's a fundamental difference between the two, because in one case we are licensed and even obligated as a bezdin to put him to death. In the other case we have to leave it to the hands of God. That's the obvious distinction. But Rav Meir Simcha finds another distinction. And that is about the age in which a person is guilty to be condemned to death. Now let me ask you a question, and this is you're going to give me a Jewish answer, not a Western culture answer, because the West is going to give a totally different answer to this question. But in a Jewish context, at what age is a person considered culpable or liable to be put to death for his crime in a Jewish court?
20.
At the age of 13. If he's a boy, at the age of 12 and a girl. In other words, a 13, that's why I'm telling you, you know, we come from a Western culture, you know, where, you know, you're not allowed to drink until you're 20 and so forth. You can't go to a bar. I don't know, whatever laws that, you know, change both and so forth and so on. But in a Jewish context, it's fascinating that a 13-year-old boy is considered liable and he will be put to death by a court. That's only in a case where he violated a crime that is a chiyuv misas bezdin, a chiyuv misa bidei adam. And there is a long list of such crimes. If he's guilty and we have to have edim and asura and all the conditions and so forth and so on, and he's 13 years old, he will be put to death. However, in Dei Shamayim, if a person is only guilty because of a chiyuv misa bidei shamayim, and there are many cases that fit into that category, then he will only be put to death if he committed that crime at the age of 20.
I think there was something about
20.
Pillei plon.
And again, a chiyuv bidei shamayim is only if he committed the crime at the age of 20. Now, comes along Rav Meir Simcha with two premises. Premise number one is that Yosef was less than the age of 20. How did Rav Meir Simcha know that? It says so in the Torah, because Rav Meir Simcha knew how to read a pasuk in Chumash, and the pasuk says that he was 17 years old.
So he wasn't 20 yet. Oh.
That's clear. He was not 20. Now Rav Meir Simcha comes with a second premise, that Yosef was guilty, and perhaps even guilty of a cardinal criminal crime, meaning he was worthy of death. And this is based on a statement in Chazal. Again, I'm not giving you all the sources right now. You'll see them in the footnotes here. That says that the brothers judged him in a court of law, and they came to the conclusion that he, Yosef, had intentions to have them put to death. This all has to do with another complicated pasuk here at the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev that says, "Hevi di basam ra el avihem." Again, it would take me hours to go through this. You're going to have to give me a little rope here. And the Gemara says that they actually convened a bezdin to determine whether Yosef was threatening their lives, and if he was threatening their lives, he should be put to death. Reuven came to the conclusion, listen carefully, that although he agreed with the decision that Yosef was guilty and he was setting up a situation in which he was endangering the lives of the brothers, nevertheless, in a Jewish court of law, we cannot put him to death. Why? Because this is a chiyuv misa bidei shamayim. Like, for example, if I were to tell you that if you tie someone down, I mentioned in the railroad tracks, right? And he's going to die when the railroad comes. Can such a person who tied him down be put to death in a Jewish court of law? The answer is no. Why? Because he hasn't committed the crime with his hands. He has caused someone's death. And that is a chiyuv misa bidei shamayim. God will put him to death. Again, only if he's 20 years old when he did that. But if he murders someone, then the court will put him to death even at the very young age of what? 13. Are you with me, Rabbi Osai? Oh. Reuven came to the conclusion that although the brothers, with all due respect, had condemned through their court case Yosef to die, Yosef was indeed endangering their lives, but nevertheless, he could not be put to death by bidei adam. And Reuven's opinion was that their decision and their verdict did not give them license to kill Yosef. So what does Reuven do? He advocates misa bidei shamayim. Throw him into a pit. But Reuven says that he's not going to die in the pit. Why?
He's not 20 yet.
Because he's not yet 20. And if he's not yet 20, he's not chayav misa b'nei shamayim. So mimanav shach, he won't die. We can't put him to death because he was only contemplating and indirectly causing their danger, but he wasn't an outright absolute rotzeach b'yadayim. He wasn't killing anybody with his hands. Ella, they were right and justified in condemning him on a level of misa b'day shamayim, except for one technicality. And what's that? He was less than 20 years old. Therefore, Reuven said he will not die b'day shamayim, even though by throwing him into this pit, the natural result that we would anticipate was that he would die b'day shamayim, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu would definitely have rachmanis and mercy on him, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows, like Reuven knew, that he, Yosef, is not chayav misa b'day shamayim. So let's look at Rav Meir Simcha in the sign, inside. Just give me 1 minute, and then that. Bizarre HaKadosh Herich Mazah Hatzola. What does it mean he saved them? Im Yutal Bibar Moliak Nechoshim Vakravim V'nira Lefi Anius Daiti, says Rav Meir Simcha. Again, he's completely ignoring the answer of the Zohar. He's very original. He says, according to my humble opinion, Ki Choshvu, they, the brothers, by judging him in a court, they came to the mistaken conclusion. Again, this is Reuven's take on it, that they made a mistake. Ki hu mechuyav misa b'day adam, and therefore they wanted to put him to death with a misa b'adayin. Because again, he was already 13 years old, Yosef, and if he was guilty of murder because he was trying to have them knocked off, then enochinami, he should be put to death in a Jewish court. Comes along Reuven, he says, but wait a minute, did Yosef kill anybody? He may have planned and schemed to kill somebody, according to their opinion. Again, they totally misunderstood Yosef's intention, but they came to the mistaken conclusion that he was endangering their lives. But he had not yet committed murder. And if he hadn't committed murder, then all his planning and scheming comes under a chiyuv misa b'day shamayim. However, when it comes to misa b'day adam, if the brothers would have been correct in their decision, their verdict, then Dunin, they can judge him and condemn him to death, mi ben yud gimel. But when it comes to a crime that is not on that level of a misa b'day adam, it's only on the level of a misa b'day shamayim, ain Dunin also ad ben chaf. Unless he committed that crime at the age of 20, Vahu and Yosef lo higia leben chaf. Now take a look for a moment in footnote number 3, if you happen to have that. Yes? No? Maybe? Footnote number 3?
Yeah.
Okay, it starts with the word Uruvain. Uruvain hayasavar ki magia lo onesh rak bidei shamayim, but that's only begil esrim. V'lachain, he says, read the pasuk. It says, Vayatzileu miyadam. What does miyadam mean? He saved Yosef from their hands. What is the Torah saying? Why didn't the Torah just say Vayatzileim? What does it mean, Vayatzileu miyadam? Miyadam means he saved Reuven, he saved Yosef from being killed at the hands of the brothers. Why? Because he came to the conclusion that Yosef was not chayav misa b'day adam, and they had no right to put him to death. So what did Reuven decide to do? Hifker osam l'day shamayim. He knew b'yado ki ein lo onesh b'day shamayim. Why? Because Yosef was less than what?
20,
would he die in the pit?
No,
he wouldn't die in the pit. So that there are two parts to what Rav Meir Simcha is saying, if I understand it correctly. One part is that it's Vayatzileihu, and one part is Miyadam. The Miyadam tells me that Reuven said, hey, you have no right to condemn him to death b'day Adam, that you yourselves as the Beis Din could put him to death. That's impossible, because he never murdered anybody, so he's not to be condemned for that kind of a criminal offense. At worst, you can condemn him for a criminal offense of a chiyuv misa b'day shamayim, when a person does everything to try to cause someone else's death, and that's how they judged him. But that's only b'day shamayim, and therefore he takes Yosef away from their hands. And he says, let's throw him into a bar. The bar is a very dangerous bar. The brothers are therefore very satisfied. He's going to definitely die at the bottom of the bar. But Reuven knew that he wouldn't die at the bottom of the bar. This is the second part of the Chiddush of Rav Meir Simcha. And why did Reuven, why was he convinced that he wouldn't die at the bottom of the bar? Because he was less than what? less than 20. And if he was less than 20, there was no chiyuv misa b'dei shamayim, and God would not allow him to die a natural death by being attacked by these serpents and scorpions, because God knew that ein lo onus b'dei shamayim. Go ahead, Doc. The floor is yours. I just wanted to give you a picture of six lines in Rav Meir Simcha that took me a half hour.
when the accused does the Avera under the age of 20, you wait until he's 20 to say that he's B'day Shammai?
No.
So he has to do it when he's 20 and
correct,
over.
Correct.
So that both come together.
Right.
And the same with the 13-year-old.
Right.
If he does the Avera
before he's 13, he's not guilty even after he passes 13. It's interesting that you ask that question, because the Gemara has a case in Mezikin of, I think it was Rav Ashi, I don't remember who it was, who burnt someone's shtar when he was a child. And when he became 13, they forced him to pay for the shtar, which is really fascinating. And that's the Hagos Oshri, a famous Hagos Oshri, that even a child is guilty of Nezikin. In the laws of Nezikin, if he damages someone and he's mature enough to understand, we have to know what age that is, but he's less than 13, he's guilty to pay. But we can't force him to pay. Why? Because he can't take a katan who's less than 13 to a bezdin. But when we wait until he passes his 13th birthday, now we can take him to bezdin, we can make him pay for damages that he incurred when he was 12. But not so in the case of Misa Bidei Adam. Misa Bidei Adam means that he had to have been 13 when he committed the crime. Now, Yosef was planning, according to their understanding, their misunderstanding, the brothers, to cause the death of the brothers. And therefore they condemned him to death. That you'll see, by the way, at the end of footnote number 2, and he says, V'choshvu es Yosef kinochel u'misnakesh b'nafsham. In my print, by the way, it's in bold.
Yes.
Bold. You have it in bold in your print? Yes. La Misa. V'atora omra abola hargacha hashkem laharga. So that's a whole different take on it. We didn't really... But the main point is that according to Rebbe Simcha, although they were right and justified to judge him and condemn him as a potential murderer, but that doesn't make him chayav bidei Adam. It's only bidei Shamayim. So at the best, you can throw him into the pit, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to stand idly by watching him get devoured by the serpents and by the scorpions, and he's going to die. But Reuven understood that wouldn't happen because Yosef was less than 20. Okay, let's go on to the next piece.
Just one last question.
Yeah.
I heard, I don't know if this is the right context, that a person over the age of 70, if he hasn't died by then he wasn't done to...
Correct. He wasn't guilty of any chiyuv misa b'dei shamayim. That's why the Gedol Yisrael would celebrate their 70th birthday. Okay. They made a big deal about the 70th birthday.
I thought it was 60.
I'll talk about that on Shabbos in Mitzvah Shem at 8 o'clock, because this parasha we have Paro's birthday. So the question is, should we imitate Paro and celebrate birthdays? No. Maybe at the age of 70. Now, at the age of 60 is Yotze Mechal Kares.
That's what it was.
And that's why you celebrate the 60th birthday. But let's go on to the next piece, if that's okay. Habar reik ein bo mayim. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to tell us, we'll see, I'm just giving you a little bit of background. It's the very next piece, so hopefully you'll find it. That if you experience a miracle in your life and you're spared from death, then any time in your life that you get to that place, that location, you have to make a bruch. Okay then? And the Gemara is going to tell us later that when they were burying Yaakov Avinu, Yosef stopped at the bar where he was thrown into by his brothers and he made a bracha. Okay, that's a fulfillment of this Gemara in Brachos that you'll see quoted here in number 1, footnote number 1 here on Daf Nun Dalet Amud Aleph, Haroah Mokom Shenasa Bones Omer Baruch Shasa Nisim. Now, not only do you have to make a bracha if you had a miracle, but if your forefathers had a miracle. Fine. Okay. We're going to get into that in just a minute. But I just want to mention that in a general sense, without getting into the details, as a background to understand this unbelievable insight of Rav Meir Simcha. A man sees a place where he experienced the miracle, Mevarech, he recites, Baruch Sha'asali Nes B'makom Hazeh. Now, at this point, Rav Meir Simcha, in his great erudite scholarship, quotes the Avud Raham. The Avud Raham is like the Baal Abbas over Brachos and Tfilos. He lived about 600 years ago. I tried to get a copy of the Avud Raham. I couldn't afford it. But I do have an old copy of the Avud Raham that's hundreds of years old. I couldn't get the original. I'm not wealthy enough. Anyway, so the Avud Raham writes that what does it mean that you're obligated to recite a bracha at the place where you experience the miracle? Dafka sheyotza miderech hateva. There are different types of miracles. Sometimes a miracle is divine intervention to save you, but it's built into the natural order of events. That's like Purim. You know, Purim is, you know, everything you could explain, al piderech hateva. That's not what the Gemara has in mind. When the Gemara has in mind that you have to make a bracha, that's only if it's clearly and obviously supernatural. Something changes. So now let's ask ourselves the following question. When we light Hanukkah candles, and I have no doubt in my mind that the reason why Rav Meir Simcha addresses this question is because Parshas Vayeshev always coincides either with Hanukkah or right before Hanukkah. But anyway, a person lights Hanukkah candles and he makes the following bracha. This is the second bracha of three brachas. Baruch Atah Hashem al-Gedim, Sha'asa Nisim Lavoseinu Bayomim Ayim Bazman Hazeh. Rav Meir Simcha thinks that that bracha is connected somehow to this Gemara of a nest. Now, what happened on Hanukkah? Two things. What happened on Hanukkah? Number one, we defeated the Yavanim. Right? We have a book here called My Glorious Brothers. You can read about the defeat of the Chashmonaim of the Yavanim. And number two, what happens when they found the Pach HaShemet? It lasted for 8 days. Okay, so the two great miracles. Now, in a minute, I'm going to ask you which is the primary miracle and which is the secondary miracle. But before I ask you that question, I want to stimulate your brain to think about that. On which of these two miracles are we obligated to make a bracha? Sha'asa, Nisan, Lavoseinu, etc. Well, the Avud Raham just said that when you make a bracha on a nes, what is that nes? It's got to be what? Yatza Miderech HaTeva. So which of the two Nisan would you say obligate us to make that bracha shasa nisim? Excellent, the shemesh. He says, "V'hadim avarech al ner Chanukah mishum shenase nes bepach hashemen." In my edition, we have to turn the page. I don't know if it's in your photocopy. Yeah. There was a great miracle in the pach hashemen shezeh neged hateva. In other words, if you would Google, how long can a Pach Shemen last? The Google will tell you that it can only last for 24 hours. This is clearly a supernatural miracle that changes the law, the natural law of the universe. Now, Rav Meir Simcha asks, but which of these two miracles was the Ikar, the primary miracle? And Rabosai, what's going to be your obvious answer to that question?
The battle.
The battle, because that's going to guarantee the continued existence of the nation of Israel. With all due respect to the Pach HaShemen, it's a very nice miracle. It's a beautiful miracle. But there's a much greater miracle, and that is the Nitzachon Mimalchus Antiochus. And the Rambam writes in Hilchas Chanukah that in the aftermath of the battle of the military victory, Klal Yisrael were able to have an independent Malchus, a kingship, a Jewish kingship in Israel for 200 years. Now again, I don't know if Rabosa you appreciate that, but 200 years in the history of Israel to have freedom and independence. Again, we celebrate Yom HaTzmud here, what are we up to, 71? Okay, that's impressive, but how many periods of time in Jewish history? Again, let's talk after the Churban HaBayis, for example. So here we have a period of time after the Ness of the Nitzachon, defeating the Malchus of Antiochos, that we had 200 years of independent kingship. That, no doubt, is a great miracle. Ulis Zichron, in order to immortalize this great miracle, meaning that we should have a memory of this miracle, Tzarech Lahayir Neros, we need the lights. However, the lights of the candle now play a double role. on one level, it is a sort of duplicate or a replica of the original miracle in the Pach HaShemen. On the other hand, it's a zichron that we should always remember the great victory of the Jewish people, the Chashmonaim, over the Yavanim. Says Rav Meir Simcha, there are two fundamental differences between the two dimensions of lighting candles and the two miracles that we are commemorating and immortalizing. One difference is as far as a brach is concerned. We only make the brach on the candles because, paradoxical as it sounds, the miracle of the Pach HaShemen, despite the fact that that miracle is so secondary, it's dwarfed by the great miracle of the Nitzachon and the Melchama. But the answer is that's Yotza Mechlal HaTeva, and therefore as the Avodrom establishes, we're required to make a brach. As great as the miracle of the war against the Yavanim is, we would not make a bracha on the Ner Chanukah if it was only Zichron, if it was only to remember Lahoyer HaNeros. However, Rav Meir Simcha, with his brilliant original mind, comes up with a second difference between these two dimensions of lighting candles. One is to duplicate the miracle, the Pach HaShem, and the other is as a zikaron, that we should remember the great miracle on the battlefield, which is the Ikar HaNes. He says the following, Ach lohoros al nes Pach HaShem. He says that, on the one hand, you know, we have this great embellishment of the mitzvah of Pach HaShemen, that we make a bracha on the Pach HaShemen, if you follow what I'm saying, because that's the chutz derech hateva. But on the other hand, we have a certain restriction, a certain limitation in this mitzvah. And what is that? Tzorich dafka shiyehei sholta ba'ena toch esrim amo. Now, I'm not going to go into issues in halach and psak about a person who lives on a gigantic apartment house, right? His flat is way, way up on the sky, and how does he fulfill the mitzvah there? Chanukah is a very complicated shaila in halacha, but let's just take the halacha at face value. And halacha is that a person looks, how far up does he see with his eye? Up to, but not beyond 20 amah. This is halacha in Hilchas Schach. For example, you can't put the schach 20 amas above because the Torah says Laman Yedu. It's halacha in Erevin that you have to see the Lechi and the Korah and you can't set it up 20 amas above. And it's also halacha in Ner Chanukah that the Ner Chanukah must be below 20 amas. Says Rav Meir Simcha, if the mitzvah of Ner Chanukah was just to commemorate the greatest miracle, the primary miracle, the Zikaron, that we should remember the military battle, it wouldn't matter one iota where you light the candles. As long as you see the candles, that's sufficient. But when it comes to the Pach HaShemen, your obligation is to publicize the miracle so that others will see it. And on that miracle, you'll make a bracha. But in order to publicize the miracle so that others will see it, it's got to be below Esrim Amah. The Remez Lazeh, he wants to give another sort of strength to his position. He says that the Heichal was 20 amas high. And where did the great miracle Chutz L'Derech HaTeva take place in the Pach HaShemen? It was in the Heichal. And therefore the Pach HaShemen has to be immortalized through the Ner Chanukah, but up until 20 Amah, because we're trying to replicate the original miracle that took place in the Heichal. And the Heichal did not go up above 20 Amah. This is also based on a sugya in Masech de Midos. I mean, it's unbelievable how many different sugyas he is connecting together. So we have to make the house, you know, where we light the Ner Chanukah, we have to turn it into a Makom Shenasa Bones. We have to turn it into a Heichal. And if we want to transform our home into a heichal, it's got to be below 20 amah. And that's how we have a makom shenasa bones, and we designate this as our personal heichal, and we recite a bracha, because when a person experiences a miracle, and he sees that location, he's got to recite a bracha. All this, my friends, is an introduction to the parsha of Yosef. Vehine, behold, there's a Medrash Tanchuma, or the author of the Medrash Tanchuma, Rabbi Tanchuma, is quoted in the Medrash Rabba, that Yosef, when he was going to bury his father in Ma'aras HaMachpelah, he stopped on the way when he passed the place where the bar, the pit into which he was thrust, and L'shem Shamayim Niskaven, he did not try to insult or put fear in the hearts of his brothers that I remember, you know, what happened and you threw me into this pit, but rather he wanted to fulfill his obligation. Levarech barach sha'asani li nes b'makom hazeh. So he stops by the bar and he recites this brach. Now Rav Meir Simcha wants to ask the following question. Was there a nes that Yosef experienced, which is chutz l'derech hatev? Again, we're committed now to the Avodraham. The Avodraham says that under what circumstances, what conditions have to be met in order to fulfill your obligation to make this bracha? It's got to be what kind of nes, everybody? Chutz l'derech hatev.
But he was in a pit with snakes and scorpions.
Excellent. Beautiful. Says Rav Meir Simcha, Yosef experiences two miracles, just like we in Hanukkah commemorate two miracles. What are these two miracles? One miracle is that the brothers agreed to take him out of the bar. And at the end they sell him as an eved, but that saved him. And that was a miracle. There was another miracle, that before the brothers took him out of the bar, he was not stung, I don't know what word to use, by the Akravim and the Nechashim. And that was a great miracle as well. Ask yourself, which is the Ikar HaNes? And Rav Meir Simcha says that if you want to compare two miracles and decide which is the primary, which is secondary, you look at Jewish history. For example, in the case of Hanukkah, which of the two miracles, the Pach HaShemen or the Nitzachon against the Yevonim, which was critical in Jewish history and would guarantee the survival of our nation? It was the Melchama, correct? Ask yourself, in the case of Yosef, which of the two miracles, the brothers taking him out of the bar, or the fact that he survived the Nechashim and Akravim in the bottom of the pit, which is the Ikar HaNes?
The bottom of the pit.
It's the brothers taking him out. Why? He says because the brothers took him out, and what did they do with him? They sold him as a slave. Where did they sell him to? Mitzrayim. Yosef in Mitzrayim becomes what? Eventually? The viceroy of Mitzrayim. That saves the Jewish people. That's what's going to guarantee our survival. Because in Mitzrayim, they got food from Yosef. Because if not for Yosef, they would have died of starvation. Which of these two miracles are greater? The fact that the brothers took him out of the bar and they sold him to Mitzrayim? Or the fact that he survived the Nechashim and Akravim? The paradox, says Rav Meir Simcha, is that the survival against the scorpions is a miracle which is chutz l'derech hateva. Al pi derech hateva, there's no way that you could be thrown into this bar that's so dangerous and survive it. HaKadosh Baruch Hu intervened, supernatural, and that requires a bracha. But if you ask me which is the more primary miracle, it's the fact that the brothers pulled him out of the bar and they sold him as an eved to Mitzrayim. And therefore, says Rav Meir Simcha, on what miracle will Yosef make the bracha? On the primary miracle or on the secondary miracle? On the secondary miracle, because what's the advantage and why does it supersede? Because it has the element of chutz l'derech hateva, that God intervened to change teva. The fact that the brothers decided to take him out of the bar, that was their decision, because Yehuda says to them, "Ma betza, you know, what profit are we going to make out of it? Let's just sell him as an eved." That's within the framework of nature. But that miracle is so much greater. The same Rabbi Tanchum, who was quoted in the Medrash, that Yosef went back to the bar to make the brach, is the same Rabbi Tarfon who tells us in the Gemara in Brachos that this bar was full of Nechashim and Akravim. And therefore it's Rabbi Tanchum's opinion that the miracle of Yosef surviving this pit is chutz miderech hateva. And put that together with Rabbi Tanchuma, because the Rabbi Simcha identifies Rabbi Tanchuma as Tanchuma in the next line, is the same Rabbi Tanchuma who says that he made a bracha at this point because he looked into the bar, he remembered the Anach Nechashiv Akravim, and he knew that God had saved him with a supernatural divine intervention, because Al Piderech Hatev, there's no way that you can survive this. And therefore he says Rabbi Tarfon, he, Rabbi Yosef, says Rabbi Tarfon, had an obligation to recite this bracha that's a makom shenasal dines shelo b'derech hateva. But if you ask me which of the two miracles was more powerful and more had a greater impact on the future survival of Klal Yisrael, it's not the miracle of surviving the Nechashim Vakravim, but rather it's the miracle that the brothers took him out and sold him as a slave to Mitzrayim. That's going to have the greatest impact on the future of Klal Yisrael.
But Rufa was going to come and deliver him anyway. but he wouldn't have sold him to Mitzrayim.
This I don't know. Again, sorry, Ian, I'm just trying to understand this magnificent structure that Ramesh Simcha is creating, an exact parallel between the two miracles of Hanukkah, in which one miracle is superior because it's Shalom Kederach HaTev, that's called Pachashevet. The other miracle is more significant and supersedes the first. It's probably because of the impact of history of defeating the Yevanim and guaranteeing the survival of Klal Yisrael. In the case of Yosef, we also have two different miracles. And again, we have a parallel structure in which one miracle is because of the Hashgach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. This is not a human effort, but a divine effort. It's Shalom Kederach HaTeva, that God spares him. And God whispers into the ears of the Nechashiv HaKravim, don't you touch Yosef. And that becomes the miracle that in its supernatural state requires Yosef and obligates him to make a bracha. But on the other hand, paradoxically, there's a greater miracle. And that is a human miracle within the framework of nature, that the brothers decided, Yehuda recommended, that they would sell him as a slave to Mitzrayim. That's going to save the people of Israel. And that's going to fulfill God's promise in the Bris Mein of Asarim, that the people of Israel will ultimately go down to the Eretz Lo Lahem. It's all part of a divine plan for Jewish history.
But because it's done in Nes Goloi,
there's no bracha. But yet it's the greater miracle. And it parallels the miracle of the Nes Nitzachon of Hanukkah. And he says, Lahoros, and what is this teaching us? Sheba Hanukkah, Ubi Yosef, in both cases, Hanes Hoya, Misibas Hashgacha, Nitzachon Umalucha. Nitzachon means the victory over the Yevanim, and Malucha means Yosef's being appointed as the Melech, or the Mishnah Melech of Mitzrayim. Chakshav bracha isakan al bar shelo iziku nechashim. The canon in the case of Hanukkah, the bracha is on the Pach Hashemen.
What is this with Hasavot Mehashkacha? What's it?
Where is it?
Before the word Mehashkacha.
I'm sorry, just give me a second. One second. Oh, Hasavot. Hasavot means the cause and effect. Right, Siba is a cause, right, and Mesovev is the active agent of the cause. He says that God created many, many miracles here. When you take Hanukkah and Yosef, some of the miracles are within the framework of nature, and man makes that decision. So the Chashmonaim are going to fight the battle, and the brothers are going to decide to take Yosef out of the bar and sell him as an Eved, but the direct divine intervention in a supernatural miracle when God changes the laws of nature, that in the case of Hanukkah is going to be the Pach HaShemen, in the case of Yosef is going to be the fact that the Nechashim and the Akravim do not attack Yosef. Now Rabosai, there's a long discussion here in the footnotes about the next piece in Rabbeir Simcha. But I'm looking at the clock, and I very much want to get to the third piece, which is the most important piece for us today. So I'm going to leave out the discussion of the last piece. It has to do with Shaul, who's running after David, and he surrounds him at one point, and a great miracle occurs, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends a malach to Shaul, and Shaul stops running after David. and they're going to be, there's going to be two miracles again in the case of David, and the question is going to be on what miracle does David recite a bracha. And Rabbi Simcha is going to argue that since the Malach intervened here, and that was Shalom B'derech HaTeva, that Shaul would stop his force, therefore he made a bracha on that miracle. Again, as I say, that's another discussion, but I'm very eager to fast forward to Lamed Zayin Chaf Vav. Doc, if you don't mind telling me what page it's on, because I have it on Resh Pei Hey, that's not going to help.
Kufayim Beis.
Lamed Zayin Pasuk Chaf Vav Mabetza Ki Narog Esachim. Rabosai, I'm telling you right now, I get very emotional. This piece that we're about to learn, and I'm angry at myself that I didn't leave enough time for this. This piece, if Rabbi Simcha would have taught me this piece, and only this piece, I would have given him a PhD, and I would have walked by foot across Europe. That's what the Gaon said about the Mesillas Yesharim, that if he would have lived at the time of Mesillas Yesharim, he and the Mesillas Yesharim were alive, he would have walked by foot across Europe, the Vilna Gaon said, in order to meet and hear Torah from the Ramchal. Wow. He quotes a Gemara in Sanhedrin. The Gemara in Sanhedrin focuses our attention on one word that comes out of the mouth of Yehuda, Mabetza Ki Narog Esachim. And the Gemara quotes Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir is very harsh on what's called Bitzia. Bitzia means when the judges decide to hand down a compromise, what we call today in our language mediation, and they decide that instead of Reuven winning the case and forcing Shimon to pay $1,000, and instead of Shimon winning the case and Shimon doesn't pay a penny, a dime, so what they do is they work out some sort of a compromise. And Rabbi Meir says that if a judge institutes a compromise, then he is guilty of the same crime as Yehuda, who worked out a compromise. What was Yehuda's compromise? Instead of killing Yosef, instead of letting Yosef just off the hook, we're going to sell him as a slave to Mitzrayim. That's the word betza, according to Rabbi Meir, in the Gemara in Sanhedrin Daf Vav, that comes out of the mouth of Yehuda. Let's work out a compromise. And you and I might think that compromise and mediation is a great thing, but Rabbi Meir is very harsh. In Rabbi Meir's Hashkafa, to work out a compromise means to undermine the entire system of justice that the Torah worked out. The Torah wants justice. And either Reuven the Tovah has the evidence or he doesn't have the evidence. But that's something that has to be weighed carefully by the judges, and they must issue a decision one way or the other. It's black or white. There's no gray area here for compromise. And the blame that we put on these judges, says Rabbi Meir, is the same blame that we put on the shoulders of Yehuda because he worked out a compromise. Says Rabbi Meir Simcha, let's analyze two episodes in the life of Yehuda. One episode is when he encourages or recommends to his brothers that we shouldn't kill Yosef, but rather we should sell him to the Ishmaelim or whatever it is. Says Rabbi Simcha, let's analyze Yehuda's mindset and the entire episode. He says the following: every action of a person can be identified under two different categories, two different dimensions. One is called the Kavanas HaMaisa, and the other he calls the Tachlis HaMaisa. The Kavanas HaMaisa is your intention. The Tachlis HaMaisa is what happens as a result of your action. So again, we're looking at human activity in two ways. Number one, what motivates the person? Was he interested in doing something good? He made the right decision, or bad? He made the wrong decision. What was his intention? That's called Kavanas HaMaisa or Machshavas HaMaisa. The other is what happened as a result. And the strange thing is, the paradox of human experience is that sometimes you could be motivated by the wrong intentions, but what comes out is something great, something unbelievably great. And that's where Yehuda comes into play. Yehuda had the wrong intentions. He wanted to sell his brother Yosef as an eved and get rid of him in that way. But the tachlis, even though the machshava was raw, was absolutely amazing. this would guarantee, as we said before, not only the survival of the Jewish nation at that time, the Bnei Yaakov, but also guarantee the fulfillment of the divine promise at the Bris Bein HaMetzorim. So the Machshava was L'ra, but the Maisa and its Tachlis was a great Tova. Says Rav Meir Simcha, the second event which follows immediately after this one, and it's recorded in the Torah, is exactly the same. Exactly the same. This is the Maisa of Tamar. Who was Tamar in the eyes of Yehuda? As far as he was concerned, who was this woman with whom he would have an immoral relationship? Who was she? She was a dozona. She was a prostitute. So his machshava was a machshava l'ra. But who was born as a result of his escapade with this zona? It was Mashiach. It's again the same deal. It's a machshava ra, but it's a tachlis l'tova. Says Rav Meir Simcha, this is called avera goreres avera. What he means is it's l'dugmasa. The second avera is an exact mirror image of the first avera. It's a machshava l'ra, and it's a tachlis l'tova. The greatest tova that comes out of that relationship between Yehuda and Tamar. Says Rav Meir Simcha, if you're guilty of one kind of an avera, know that it's going to drag in its aftermath a second avera, which is similar, which is a parallel mirror kind of avera to the first avera. And if Rav Meir Simcha would have stopped here, again, I don't know how I could kiss and hug him. I wouldn't have enough to say about it. But he goes on, and this is only the beginning. He says the following. Rabbi Tanchum, again the same Rabbi Tarfon that we mentioned earlier, says the following, that the Pasuk Mabetza, in Yehuda's case, foretells another chapter and another human decision in Jewish history, a very, very powerful and profound decision, and that is Aaron HaKohen. Aaron HaKohen faces a mob at the Maisa HaEgel. And if you take, again, you don't have the same printing, but in mine, it's the top left column. Rabbi Tanchum says that Aaron decided to collect all their silver and so forth, throw it into the fire, and create an Egel. Why? Why did Aaron do that? Aaron said the following, Avdi li, they're going to do to me if I refuse to comply, Kida Avdu Bechor, Tchur. Chur was put to death. And the halacha is based on a pasuk in Tanakh, Im Yarog B'Migdash Hashem Kohen V'Novi Lo Havile Takanta Liolam. If they would put me to death as both a Kohen and a Novi, that's it, kaput, that's the end of Klal Yisrael. So he made a pshara. And he said, let's collect their possessions, gold. Their gold and so forth, throw it into the thing. The Maisa is a Maisa Ra. It's a very bad Maisa because he created an Egel and the people worshipped the Egel. But a Machshava was a Machshava L'tova. Says Rav Meir Simcha, the Avera of Aaron is the flip side of the Avera of Yosef. Of Yehuda in both the compromise to sell Yosef and the mice that he had with Tamar. This is the flip side. Doc, isn't it true that the eye sees things upside down? That's what they taught me when I was a kid. I don't know. And the eye turns something upside.
Right.
So this is the reverse image. I don't know what you call it in English. There should be a phrase for it. The reverse image.
Contralateral.
Contralateral. This is the contralateral of the Avera of Yehuda. Aaron is the exact opposite. Aaron is a Machshava L'tova, but the Tachlis was raw ma'od, because this is going to change the whole nature of Jewish history. It's going to ultimately bring about the destruction of the first Mikdash, the second Mikdash, and all the punishments throughout Jewish history is always, for at least to some extent, is because of the Chet HaEgel. Says Rav Meir Simcha, Shnehem tzrichim kapara. They both need kapara. They both, both of these categories, whether it's the machshava ra and the tachlis was tova, or the machshava tova and the tachlis was ra, I'm going to prove to you, says Rav Meir Simcha, from a Gemara at the end of Masechta Kiddushin. Again, his erudite scholarship is mind-boggling, but not just scholarship. He knows when it's conceptually appropriate to quote a source. And the Gemara says at the end of Kiddushin, there are two situations, both of which require kapar. The first situation is a person wanted to eat treif. He, you know, the Yetzirah got the best of him, and, you know, maybe one of his Goyish friends says to him, you know what? You Jews are missing something great. Taste a piece of bacon. So he decides he's going to eat bacon. But what happens? V'ochel tleh. Miracle of miracles, it turned out to be kosher meat. But his intention was to eat chazak. And he needs kapara. Then the Gemara has the opposite case. His intention was to eat basar tleh, to eat kosher meat. But unfortunately, as fate would have it, he ate chas. He happened to have eaten a piece of non-kosher meat. And the Gemara says, he also needs kapar. In the first case, his kavana was lira, but the tachlis hamaisa was litova. He ate a piece of tleh. In the second case, his kavana was litova, but the tachlis hamaisa was lira. In both cases, you need kapar. I'm getting very emotional about this, so I apologize. So Yosef, I'm sorry, Yehuda needs kapara in both of his averos because his machshava was raw, even though the maisa was tova. Aaron needs kapara even though his machshava was the tova because the tachlis hamaisa was the raw. And these parallel the two cases in the Gemara Kiddushin. Says Rav Meir Simcha, these two concepts touch on a Gemara in Masechta Nazir. The Gemara in Masechta Nazir talks about a mitzvah shalom lishma and an avera lishma. A mitzvah shalom lishma means that you didn't have the right intentions, but as luck would have it, it turned out that you did a mitzvah. An avera lishma means you knew very well that you were violating the Torah. And you did it l'shem shamayim, but at the end of the day, you did an avera. And both cases need kapara. And he ends up this paragraph, which again is only half of this presentation, with a gemara that says haker no. What happens is that Tamar, when she's about to be burnt at the stake, sends a message to Yehuda. Haker na, recognize the psil and the chosem, and these are yours. And the Gemara tells us that the same word haker na was offered by Yehuda when he told his father. When he told his father, recognize the blood, recognize the garment on which is bloodstained, the ketones pasi. And this is what we call. A very good verse. Okay, we'll stop here.
Rabbi, just one question. If you have a good intention and you don't care and you prevent it from doing it.
If you don't mind, Rabbi, could you just ask you for one favor to open up the door because I'm late for my next class.
Yeah, go ahead. If you have a good intention and you don't manage to do it, it's as if you did it.
Ah.
If you have a bad intention and you don't manage to do it, then you don't get punished.
Right. But all our discussions here. No, I'll tell you why. Because all our discussions are about a bad intention in which you actually did the mice. So the discussion about a good intention and a bad intention is where you didn't do the mice. You had planned to do a mitzvah, but you never implemented the mitzvah. The case of machshava ra is where you had a bad intention, but you never implemented with any mice. Our discussion is totally exclusively limited to a case of machshava and mice. Where you did the action.
Rabbi,
okay, Rabbi, both sides.
Brilliant. Thank you.
After